A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, The Song of the Avanti Brahmana, verses 1 to 22, and today we'll go up to verse 41. Verse 1. Sivamashamsita uttavena bhagavata mukhyena dasarha mukhya Savatayam vittavacha mukundastam avapase shavaniya vivya. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Mukunda, the chief of the Dasharhas, having thus been respectfully requested by the best of his devotees, Sri Uddhava, first acknowledged the fitness of his servant's statements. Then the Lord, whose glorious exploits are most worthy of being heard, began to reply to him. So then in verse 33, there's a very interesting comment by Satyaraj. Yes, when the three modes of nature are agitated, the resultant transformation appears as the element false ego in three phases, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Generated from Mahatattva, which is itself produced from the unmanifested Pradhan, this false ego becomes the cause of all material illusion and duality. And so Satyaraj Prabhu analyzes the false ego according to modern psychology. So this is what the modern psychology says about the false ego. Whenever two people meet, at least six people are present. Six people are there whenever two people meet. Who are those six people? There is each person as he sees himself. So how we see ourselves. Second, each one as the other person sees him. So how the other person sees you. Then third, each person as he really is. So there's the reality, there's how you see yourself, and there's how the other person sees you. Present two. So then that's, you got two people and you got three for each one of them. And then present two are all the people and actions that have influenced each of them throughout their lives. Thus, it is virtually impossible to know who we really are until we become accomplished in the process of self-realization. So when we become self-realized, or we even in the process, you can just see your false ego and how it's not you. You can see your mind, you can see your body, you can see all these things, and you can be separate from it and just observe and see how this is not me. This is not my nature. This is imposed on me. So, yes, oftentimes you'll do something or you'll hear something and you'll say, oh, that's what my mother used to say, or that's what my father used to say. And you realize, oh, that's not me. That's not me. That's not who I am. Yes. So then verse 38, there's also a nice comment. Verse 38 says, the mind, bound to the reactions of fruitive work, always meditates on the objects of the senses, both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with its objects of perception. Thus, its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. So this talks about change of body, and even, of course, the body is always changing. So we forget things even during our present day. We forget about yesterday and the day before. So this change of body. But he comments, this verse explains how the mind loses its ability to remember previous lives or plan for future ones. Because it is completely ensconced in its current physical form, conditioned by the modes, and by its attachment to fruitive activities, it cannot break the illusion that binds it to its current life. So we really think, this is who I am in this life. This is me. Only through the trials and tribulations of material life does the mind one day start to question the viability of material existence. Then, due to prayer and good fortune, God sends one of his pure representatives to carry the aspiring spiritualist further, giving him food for thought in various ways. Yeah, Satyaraj's book. I brought it today because now I have to start reading from it since I don't have it on the paper. So I'll be reading some of his comments right from the book. So verse 39 of 22. When the living entity passes from the present body to the next body created by his own karma, he becomes absorbed in the pleasurable and painful sensations of the new body and completely forgets the experience of the previous body. This total forgetfulness for one reason or another of one's previous material identity is called death. So when you forget everything, that's death. What's birth? Does anybody remember? I think, yes? When you identify with a new body, that's birth. And when you forget about it, that's death. So birth and death. Okay, so Satyaraj has a comment on this. Krishna elaborates on just why one forgets his previous life. The mind is not only absorbed in its new set of senses and their concomitant conditioned responses to the outer world, but the trauma of death has an impact on the mind's function. In addition, modern science reveals birth also causes forgetfulness. During the last stages of pregnancy, the mother's womb is flooded with oxytocin, a natural hormone that acts as a neurotransmitter in the brain. The baby, it is said, forgets the trauma of childbirth because of the presence of this particular hormone. No doubt this is God's kindness upon the newborn. And so that's another. There's even a scientific explanation of why we forget childbirth. But so why we forget our birth. So then the last verse of this chapter is also a comment. Verse 61, I'll read his translation. O soul of the universe, conditioning is very intense. It is therefore quite difficult for even wise people to tolerate harshness when directed against them. But I must say, your devotees who are established in your loving service, who are peaceful because of residence at your lotus feet, they are able to tolerate such decadent behavior indeed, and so much more. So what he says is that Uddhava is at first amazed the Lord's devotees would be mistreated in the ways mentioned above. But when he realizes something even more important. Ordinary people cannot tolerate mistreatment, and in fact often want to be treated like kings and queens. Not so for Krishna's devotees. They are naturally humble, and because they're innately peaceful and happy, they're able to tolerate all forms of mistreatment, accepting it as the Lord's mercy. Yes, devotees are peaceful. Now, I had one more comment here by Vishnu Chakravarti. I don't know if Brijan Prabhu read this, but I thought it was really interesting. On verse 47, which is, I believe, about the different changes of body. Yes. The nine different stages of this body, or birth, death, disease, and old age. Oh, no disease, but it just goes all the way through there. It's not mentioned, but we know. And so, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the jiva enters the womb, grows there, comes out of the womb, grows to 5 years. So 5 years old, up to 5 years is balya. Then he enters Pauganda. So not only Krishna, but all of us have these ages. Pauganda and Kaishara ages till 16 years. Youth lasts till 45 years. Did you know that? We thought middle age starts at 40, but actually, of course, this is probably in the old when you live to 100. But anyway, he says youth lasts till 45. I think it's true, though. Maybe not for me, but for some people. Middle age continues till 60 years. Old age, the rest of the life till death is called old age. So those of you who are 60 and over, that's you're officially old, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And those of you who are between 45 and 60, you're in middle age. And those of you who are under 45, you're youth. Yes. This is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Okay, so today's verse, Lord Krishna is replying to Uddhava's amazement at, you know, how can devotees, of course, only the devotees can tolerate. And there is a comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this first verse. He says, this chapter describes how a dishonest person lost his wealth and then was insulted by miscreants, and how one can remove his distress with the help of his intelligence. So tomorrow we will hear, today we will hear the first part, how he lost his wealth, and the second part, how he was insulted. Tomorrow we will hear how we can remove our distress with the help of intelligence. So you have to come back tomorrow to hear how to get free of distress. And Satyaraj Prabhu also comments on this verse. Of course, he comments on a lot of verses, but I just chose this one. It is Shukadev Goswami, the narrator of Bhagavatam, who utters this first verse, telling us this chapter will pick up where chapter 16 left off. Lord Krishna had mentioned worldly men often mistreat his devotees, for they do not understand the devotee's glorious status. In response, Uddhava asked how this could be so. Okay, so verse 2, Lord Krishna starts to reply. Lord Krishna said, O disciple of Brihaspati, there is virtually no saintly man in this world capable of resettling his own mind after it has been disturbed by the insulting words of uncivilized men. Purport. In the modern age, there is widespread propaganda ridiculing the path of spiritual realization. Thus, even saintly persons are disturbed to see the progress of human society being obstructed. Still, a devotee of the Lord must tolerate any personal insult, though he cannot tolerate offense against the Lord himself or the Lord's pure devotee. What's an example of widespread propaganda ridiculing the path of spiritual realization? Yes? Oh, yeah. What signs did the Atheist Society put under? Wow. God probably does not exist, so enjoy atheistic propaganda. Probably. They not sure. So enjoy. Oh. And some bus drivers refuse to drive these buses. Very good for them. And the court ruled they have right not to drive the buses. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know, they have these advertisements outside on buses. Atheistic society. But at least they're talking about God. See, this is the... Yeah, at least, you know, they have God. I mean, yeah. If he doesn't exist, why talk about him? why talk about something that doesn't exist? You know, what's the use of... Anyway, there's no logic. What's another example of the propaganda, widespread propaganda, ridiculing the path of spiritualization? Religion is the opiate of the people. And that, I think, is from the communist side, right? From Marx, Karl Marx. He said, religion is the opiate of the people. Yes. Yes. God is not allowed in the schools. Yes? Okay, different scientific theories do not put God in the creation. Work is worship. That's India. Yes? Some religions also don't believe in God. Yeah, I was just reading somewhere that now it's okay that you can have a religion without believing in the Supreme Being. I mean, that's in America, I think. You can have a religion. It can be an actual religion without believing in God. It can be a religion. And that's true. I mean, It's formless and, you know, it's an energy and it's like that. God, I mean, it's not a person. In other words, it's impersonal. There is a supreme, but it's not a person. Not a supreme being. Yes, you can be a perfect Judas without believing in God. It's true. Yeah, it's just like moral rules, according to this rabbi. Okay, yeah, I mean, God, yes. And in India also, they want... Prabhupada was saying they want the kingdom of Ram, Ram Raja, without Ram. They want, let's bring Ram Raja back, but they don't want to bring Ram into it. Just, they want to have the kingdom of Ram without Ram. This is going on. Yes? Yes, religious books. Minimizing, ridiculing. Well, at least they, no, that's not so bad. At least they said God made it. At least they accept that God exists and God created. Yeah, but, you know, it's not as bad. I mean, it's not, yeah. In where? Tamil Nadu, famous propaganda. Forget God, remember human beings. In Tamil Nadu. Forget God. Yeah, it's becoming, Okay, so here it's happening. Widespread propaganda ridiculing the path of spiritual realization. Yeah, Nietzsche. God is dead. And someone wrote after. Yeah, what? God is dead, sign Nietzsche. And Nietzsche. Then someone wrote graffiti, Nietzsche is dead, signed God. Yes, God gets the last word. Actually. Okay, so this is happening, verse 2. We also have a comment by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on Krishna's first statement. Supreme Lord said, O disciple of Brihaspati. So this is the significant. He picks up this word, disciple of Brihaspati. My dear Uddhava, your statements are most reasonable. There is a completely spiritual path that is incomprehensible even to your spiritual master, Brihaspati. Now hear of this from me. So he's saying, you know, Brihaspati doesn't know everything. I'm going to say something more than what you've learned from him. So verse 3, just listen to this verse and see if you have ever experienced this. Sharp arrows which pierce one's chest and reach the heart do not cause as much suffering as the arrows of harsh, insulting words that become lodged within the heart when spoken by uncivilized men. Everybody must have experienced sometime in your life this thing, that people have insulted you and it goes right to your heart. Parvati said, how many times have we done it to others? That's true. I never thought of it that way. Yes. Okay. And we must have done it to someone to get it. That's a fact. So who in Srimad Bhagavatam did this happen to? Yes. Duryodhana Vidura. I have that verse, 3:1:16. Pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. So Prabhupada writes, a pure devotee is never perturbed by an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. Conditioned so, he's disturbed. Devotee is not. Same thing Prabhupada is saying in that purport. And he said, a devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the palace and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, he thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engaged in devotional service of the Lord. So he took it as Krishna's mercy when he heard these words. Verse 4, my dear Uddhava, in this regard, a most pious story is told, and I shall now describe it to you. Please listen with careful attention. So in the purport, it explains what we will learn from this story. Lord will now relate to Uddhava a historical account which teaches how to tolerate the insults of others. 5. Once a certain sannyasi was insulted in many ways by impious men. Okay, thank you. Ram Prabhupada. Wow, talk about insult. I just got the opposite. Garlands. Now I have to tolerate the flowers. Yes, I am not allergic, no. However, with determination, he remembered he was suffering the fruit of his own previous karma. I will narrate to you his story and that which he spoke. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is a nice comment for us. Often, those who give up the materialistic path and devote themselves to renunciation are attacked by impious persons. This analysis, however, is superficial, since the punishment is actually the cumulative result of one's past karma. Some renunciants show lack of tolerance when presented with the remnants of their previous sins, and thus are forced to enter again onto the path of impious life. So if you don't tolerate, you will come back. You will become sinful. If you tolerate, then you will get mercy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore instructs, one should become as tolerant as a tree. If a neophyte on the path of devotional service to the Lord's pure devotees is attacked by envious persons. He must accept it as a consequence of his previous fruitive activities. One should be intelligent and avoid future unhappiness by rejecting the ethic of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If one refuses to enter into enmity with envious men, they will automatically leave him alone. So that last sentence is worth repeating. If one refuses to enter into enmity with envious men, they will automatically leave him alone. Yes. Actually, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he went to Prabhupada once, and he said, you know, this movement, there's prejudice. I'm feeling there are people prejudiced against me. So Prabhupada said to him, well, you know, yeah, they are in the conditioned life, and if you are also reacting to that, then you're in the same level as them. What's the difference between you and them? If you're thinking you're this body, if you're thinking that they are insulting you and you are that, then what's the difference between you and them? So that was his response to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And so, yes, I just thought of an example. It's not actually an insult, but just how people see devotees sometimes in the West. I was reading one story about Radhanath Swami when he was really late for one airplane, and he was in the airport. He had 10 minutes to go from one of the end of the airport to the other to catch his flight. And he was running through the airport, and someone shouted at him, why don't you take your flying carpet? You know, so because that's how they see devotees. They think, okay, you're a Swami from India, so you should have a flying carpet. But, you know, that's how people, they see devotees really, like, different. I mean, it wasn't like an insult, but it was kind of like, you know, a joke. But, yeah, I think he didn't have time to phone. He didn't, you know, he was just like, I mean, myself also, I had like 10 minutes to get from the gate of the air, from the where I got off from the gate. I had to go up in Heathrow Airport, up the lift, through security, down the escalator, down another lift, onto a bus to catch my next plane. I had 10 minutes, and I was like just running. What stewardess? Yeah. Okay, I'll do that next time, because I was in grab, it's like with my luggage running and going at the head of the line in security and just like, well, I was in a connecting flight, so that well, see, I didn't know it was going to happen because we landed in enough time, but then we didn't get off the plane for like 20-25 minutes waiting for the buses, so then I thought it would be okay. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Thank you for the information. I was just sitting in the plane. Yeah. Anyway, Krishna was very kind and merciful and let me catch a flight to India. And that's why I'm here today. Otherwise, I don't know what to do. Okay, so verse 6. In the country of Avanti, there once lived a certain Brahmin who was very rich and gifted with all opulences, was engaged in the occupation of commerce. But he was a miserly person, lusty, greedy, and very prone to anger. Purport. According to Shri Sridhar Swami, the Avanti country is a district of Malwa. Malwa. And according to Satyaraj, it's Ujjain. Ujjain. Avanti is Ujjain. This Brahmana was extremely wealthy, doing business in agriculture, banking, and so on. Being a miser, he suffered agony when his hard-earned wealth was lost, as will be described by the Lord himself. So some people think they're this body, some people think they're this money that they have. And when they lose the money, then they're just like, finish, because that's me, without money. And then they commit suicide, because they think, this money is me. This is my identity. Because I'm rich, because I have money, then I am something. But without the money, then they just kill themselves. They don't know what to do. Verse 7. And someone told me that in Calcutta there was a crash a few years ago, stock market crash, and people were committing suicide. People who were, yeah, in Calcutta, all over the world. Okay, yeah, because yeah. So this happened recently as well. It's history repeats itself. So, and we'll hear about all the things about all the bad things that come from having money, wealth. Verse 7. In his home, devoid of religiosity and lawful sense gratification, The family members and guests were never properly respected, even with words. He would not even allow sufficient gratification for his own body at the suitable times. So even though he had so much artha, there was no kama. He didn't even use his artha for kama. 8. Since he was so hard-hearted and miserly, his sons, in-laws, wife, daughters, and servants began to feel inimical toward him. Becoming disgusted, they would never treat him with affection. Verse 9. In this way, the presiding deities of the 5 family sacrifices became angry at the Brahmana, who, being niggardly, guarded his wealth like a yaksha, who had no good destination, either in this world or the next, and who was totally deprived of religiosity and sense enjoyment. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has comment on verse 9. Shall we read? The yakshas, so he talks about yakshas. The yaksha's only business is to accumulate and protect wealth. So yaksha, does that mean protect? Does the word mean in Sanskrit? Adi Purush, does yaksha? Yeah, he's lord of the yakshas. Yaksha means protect. So they just protect money. They do not utilize it, either for themselves or for others. The 5 types of living entities who deserve a share of sacrificial offerings are demigod sages, forefathers, human beings, and lower classes of beings. When they are deprived of their share, they become angry at a householder. 10. O magnanimous Uddhava, by his neglect of these demigods, he depleted his stock of piety and all his wealth. The accumulation of his repeated exhaustive endeavors was totally lost. Purport. The Brahmana's stock of piety became like a withered branch that no longer gives fruits or flowers. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that the Brahmana had a trace of piety directed at the Supreme Lord with hopes of liberation. So he had some kind of agata, some kind of sukriti there. Mukta. That pure portion of the branch of his piety remained unwithered, eventually giving the fruit of knowledge. So although his one branch was withered, the punya, he still had this mukti punya, something for mukti. 11. So here's how the money goes. Some of the wealth of this so-called Brahmana was taken away by his relatives, my dear Uddhava, some by thieves, some by the whims of providence, some by the effects of time, some by ordinary men, and some by government authorities. So if you try to keep it, you lose it. Somebody will take it. Purport. It appears that even though the so-called Brahmana was determined not to spend his money, his wife and other relatives managed to squeeze out a portion. So yes, the family members are expert in this. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, providence here refers to fires in the home and other types of occasional misfortune. So providence. Time refers to the destruction of agricultural crops through seasonal irregularities and other such occurrences. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, one should not merely proclaim oneself to be a Brahmana, but should actually understand one's original identity as a servant of the Lord. When declaring himself to be a Brahmana but maintaining a materialistic mentality is not a real Brahmana, but rather a Brahmabandhu, or so-called Brahmana. The humble devotees of Lord Vishnu, following the indications of the Vedic scriptures, refer to themselves as unfortunate and unable to understand the kingdom of God. They do not proudly proclaim themselves to be Brahmanas. Those who are wise, however, know such humble devotees are actually Brahmanas, whose hearts are cleansed by the pure mode of goodness. So this brings to mind something that I read about one of our sannyasis. I can't remember his name, but I can see his face. Prahladananda Swami. He was recently at a program in Australia. And he was asked by one devotee, when did you become a devotee? When did you? And he said, I'm not a devotee. I'm just trying. He says, I'm not a devotee. And they said the way he said it, he really meant it. So this is the Brahmin. He thinks, you know, I'm not a devotee. I'm just trying to be a devotee. And that was Prabhupada also, when he was asked a question about those people who serve you, are they pure devotees? And Prabhupada, one time he answered yes to Tamal Krishna. Another time he answered, well, actually, you know, I'm not a pure devotee, but I'm trying. I'm just trying to follow the instruction of my spiritual master. That's what I'm doing. So even Prabhupada said that himself. So this is the humble devotees. They do not claim to be on a certain level of advancement. Yes, we are seeing the Leela of Krishna, and we are finished with Bhagavad Gita. You hear this in Vrindavan. I've heard this in past years in Vrindavan, that Bhagavad Gita is for the neophytes, and we are just doing Leela Smarana now. We have made progress. So there is a verse about misers. In the chapter, Canto 3, verse 30, Canto 3, chapter 30, verse 31. And this is what happens to misers. 3:30-31. He goes along to the darkest regions of hell after quitting the present body, and the money he acquired by envying other living entities is the passage money with which he leaves this world. So all the money he got, that's his, pays for his ticket to go to hell, if he's a miser. So Prabhupada says, when a man earns money by unfair means and maintains his family and himself with that money, the money is enjoyed by many members of the family, but he alone goes to hell. Of course, this Brahmana didn't even give it to his family, but they managed to get it somehow. But they don't share in the reactions. Prabhupada said he alone goes to hell. The family, of course, are partially responsible and also are sent. But he who is the leader is especially punished. So the result is one takes with him the sinful reaction only and not the money. So this is what the... So Chanaka Pandit says, therefore, whatever you have in your possession, you should spend for the cause of Sat, or the Supreme Lord, because you cannot take your money with you. Either we leave the money, or the money leaves us, but we will be separated from our money. So therefore, use it to make a ticket back to Godhead instead of a ticket to hell. We should use our money in the right way, if we have money, if we get money. And the Sanskrit is san nimite varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. Use your money for a higher cause. Now, in one purport of 6.10.6, Prabhupada also talks about this. And he says, not simply this should be in relationship to money, but to our life as well, that we should not waste our life, we should not spend our life uselessly for useless things. And he quotes the same verse from Chanaka Pandit, Sanimite Varam Tyago Vinashe Niyate Sati. Everything within this material world will be destroyed, therefore one should use everything for good purposes. If one is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. Then Prabhupada says, at the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna conscious movement needs many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive God consciousness throughout the world. So Prabhupada's calling everybody. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna conscious movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving the God consciousness of human society. So we don't want to be misers, we want to use our money and our life for the best, for Krishna. Okay, verse 12. Finally, so this Brahmana was, all his money was taken away in different ways. Finally, when his property was completely lost, he who never engaged in religiosity, dharma, or sense enjoyment, kama, became ignored by his family members. Thus he began to feel unbearable anxiety. So what happens when you have artha without dharma, and even without kama, nobody likes you. Everybody hates you. You keep your money and you don't spend it. Then everybody is, the demigods are upset, the forefathers, ordinary living entities, your own family, everybody dislikes you. 13. So here's what happened to this Brahmin and what happened to all these people who lost their money in the stock market. Having lost all his wealth, he felt great pain and lamentation. His throat choked up with tears, and he meditated for a long time on his fortune. Then a powerful feeling of renunciation came over him, unlike these other people who jumped out the window. Purport. The Brahmana had previously been trained in pious life, but his past goodness was covered by his offensive behavior. Finally, his previous purity was reawakened within him. 14. The Brahmana spoke as follows. Oh, what great misfortune. I have simply tormented myself, uselessly struggling so hard for money that was not even intended for religiosity or material enjoyment, not for dharma, not for karma. What is the use if you work so hard and you don't even enjoy the money or use it for a religious purpose? Generally, 15, the wealth of misers never allows them any happiness. In this life, it causes their self-torment, and when they die, it sends them to hell. Purport. A miser is afraid to spend his money even for obligatory religious and social duties. Offending God and people in general, he goes to hell. Not only he goes to hell, he is in hell, even in this life. 16. Whatever pure fame is possessed by the famous, and whatever praiseworthy qualities are found in the virtuous are destroyed by even a small amount of greed. Just as one's attractive physical beauty is ruined by a trace of white leprosy. So someone who's famous or praiseworthy, if he has greed, then that destroys his good qualities. 17. In the earning, attainment, increase, protection, expense, loss, and enjoyment of wealth, all men experience great labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. Right. So they work very hard in the earning, so hard that foam comes out of the mouth, as we hear that pavarga. Then at getting the wealth, it's painful. Increasing it, because you're always thinking you have to work harder. Instead of 8 hours, you have to work 10, 12. Protection, maybe somebody will take it, so you have to get guards, you have to get you have to lock it up safely. Expense, so when you spend it, then you also feel bad. When you lose it, loss, enjoyment of wealth. Then you have labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. So now verses 18 to 19, we will hear 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Theft. So if you're too greedy, you will steal. Violence. You will kill or rob somebody. Speaking lies. You will tell a lie to make money. Duplicity. You will not be straightforward. Lust. Anger. Perplexity. You get confused. Pride. Quarreling. Fighting over it. Enmity. And someone becomes your enemy. Faithlessness. Yes. Because I am making money, so God, I am supreme. Envy. And the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication are the 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. So then you break the regulative principles when you have them. Somebody was telling me the other day that her mother was very rich, but because she had so much money, then she could drink as much as she wanted, and she became an alcoholic. So this is the problem. When you get too much money, then you think, oh, this is enjoyment. This is how I should spend my money. I will enjoy by drinking. Because this is what they say in the Western world is enjoyment. Although these qualities are undesirable, men falsely ascribe value to them. Gambling, intoxication, they think this is really good. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. Purport. The words anartam, artakyam, or undesirable wealth, indicate wealth that cannot be efficiently engaged in the loving service of the Lord. So here we have an explanation. It's not just all money is bad, but that money which you don't use for Krishna, that is bad. Such superfluous money or property will undoubtedly pollute a man with all of the above-mentioned qualities and therefore should be given up. Remember what happens if we keep wealth. What happens in the first canto? If you keep wealth, yes, Kali will enter. Kali will enter. Quarrel. Okay, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a very nice comment on this verse, which I even remember. 18. See, what verse are we on? We're on verse 18, 19. Okay. 18, 19. So he explains all these things. It takes great endeavor to accumulate wealth, so labor. So this is the second part of that, the last. Therefore, it causes labor, fear. I don't see it. Oh, that was the verse before. Labor, fear, anxiety, and delusion. So it takes great endeavor to accumulate wealth. And what is always afraid? His wealth will be stolen or taken away by some other means. To protect his wealth, one must lie. And excessive wealth certainly is the cause of great pride and delusion. In this way, there are 15 kinds of anarthas that surface because of wealth. So listen to this sentence. It can be concluded that artha, wealth, is the cause of all anarthas, unwanted things. Artha is the cause of anarthas. Isn't that sweet? Yes. This is verse 18-19 comment. This is Uddhava Gita by Bhumipati. It has another cover on it. This is Vishnu Chakravarti's comment on verse 18-19. Artha is the cause of all anarthas. I thought that was quite a nice statement. And all the anarthas are listed there for you to see if you have too much money and don't use it for Krishna. Verse 20. Even a man's brothers, wife, parents, and friends united with him in love will immediately break off their affectionate relationships and become enemies over a single coin. 21. For even a small amount of money, these relatives and friends become very agitated and their anger is inflamed. Acting as rivals, they quickly give up all sentiments of goodwill and will reject one at a moment's notice, even to the point of committing murder. That's relatives and friends. So be careful. Of course, we don't worry because we have left it. Yeah, we have nothing. That's the one point. And then the other point is... Does anybody have this problem with wealth? I don't know.
One kakini is enough.
One kakini, yeah, I saw that. In the one kakini. What's a kakini? I don't know.
Kakini is small coin.
One small coin, one paisa. Now there is no one paisa. It's 25, no, 50 is the minimum. And here it's 1 rupee is the minimum. In Mayapur, 50 paisa will go. But here, no, it's 1 rupee now.
In Udupi, you can still spend 25.
Wow. Udupi, 25 paisas are still accepted. So if you have any extra, you know where to go.
That's like Tolia Muna. That's in that part of when she was walking from Keshika to Radharamuda in Kamini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For one lota. Yes, we have to be careful.
What
so, between Keshigad and Radha Damodar, we used to have to walk because there were no rickshaws in those days. And we couldn't have, first of all, there weren't any, and second of all, we didn't have 1 rupee to pay them, which it cost 1 rupee. Yeah, but we didn't have the money. We had to walk from Keshigad to here. Every day we were walking from Keshigat to do Harinam here to Ramanreti and back. And then walking Keshigat to Damodar. That was in 72. Yeah. And it was scary because the lights were always going off and you couldn't see anything. So yeah, walking in the pitch black, it was scary. I remember so many, Anyway, 22. Those who obtain human life, which is paid for even by the demigods, and in that human birth becomes situated as first-class brahmanas, are extremely fortunate. If they disregard this important opportunity, they are certainly killing their own self-interest and thus achieve a most unfortunate end. So don't waste your devotee life. Purport, Śrīla Bhakti-siddhānta Saraswati Thakur comments as follows. Human birth is better than that of demigods, ghosts, spirits, animals, trees, lifeless stones, and so forth, because the demigods simply enjoy celestial pleasures, and in other forms of life there is excessive suffering. It is only in human life that one deeply considers one's ultimate benefit in life. Human birth is therefore more desirable than even that of the demigods. Within human life, the position of a high-class brahmana is certainly most desirable. If a brahmana, however, gives up devotional service to the Lord and works hard like a shudra, simply for the prestige of his community, is certainly on the platform of material sense gratification. The special qualification of the brahmana is the spiritual knowledge by which they recognize every living entity to be eternal servant of the Lord. A brahmana free from false ego thus feels himself lower than a blade of grass and tolerantly offers respect to all living entities. All human beings, and especially the brahmanas, should avoid becoming killers of their own self-interest by neglecting Krishna consciousness, the loving service of the Lord. Such neglect paves the way for future suffering. So I will go on to the next verses and see how far we go until 12 o'clock. Verse 23. What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to that abode of worthlessness, material property? So here's a person who has experience of being attached, and then now he lost everything, and now what is he left with after he's lost his money? At least he's got some realization. So let's see what Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati says about this verse. Objects intended for one's personal enjoyment are referred to as dravina, or material wealth. Those who desire to achieve wealth, who endeavor to transfer themselves to the heavenly planets, who practice renunciation with a desire to attain liberation, and who endeavor to attain the four objectives of human life, are unable to achieve their real self-interest because all of these desires are impediments to attainment of the Lord's devotional service. So he's very heavy here. If you want money, if you want to go to heaven, if you're renounced but you want liberation, and if you want dharma, artha, kama, moksha, this is not good. This is very bad for you. This is also a waste of your human form of life. All these things, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Both material enjoyment and liberation are just like a mirage for those who have received the mercy of the Lord. So here's the test. If you have got the mercy of Krishna, then the thought of liberation or material enjoyment is like a mirage to you. You can test yourself. Because material enjoyment and liberation are not conceived of as being in relation to Krishna, they are considered to be anarthas. So the theme of anarthas is here today. Artha causes anartha. Verse 24. One who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, the demigod sages, forefathers, and ordinary living entities, as well as his immediate relatives, in-laws, and own self, is maintaining his wealth simply like a yaksha and will fall down. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a comment on this verse 24. Because the demigods, so he explains why all these people are entitled to your money. Why the demigods, sages, forefathers, and living entities in general, why should they get your money? Nobody thinks like this. I should give to the living entities in general. Of course, relatives, they think, friends. So here's why. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains. Because the demigods, sages, forefathers, living entities in general, relatives and friends are all interrelated. They are shareholders of one's wealth. So you think you're the only one and you're independent. No, you got a lot of people related to you, which you may not even be aware of. And in India, there is some awareness of this. When I was in Calcutta, Pujari, we had a Marwari cook. And he was cooking for our deities, Radha Govinda. What was his name? Shantilal. Yeah. Yeah, I remember Shantilal. He was a really good cook. Gargamuni got him. And he had a habit, you know, of taking out a portion for his forefathers. Always. When I would make the offering, I said, "What are you doing?" You know, "Oh, it's for my forefathers." So they have, in India, they have this idea that I have to feed my father who left his body, and my grandfather, and all of them, they also have to eat. I have to feed them. So every time he cooked, he would keep some aside for his forefathers. Interesting. So anyway, yeah, this idea, most in the West, you know, even the immediate family, they don't, even your mother and father's living, they don't think you need to give anything to them, or your children. Yeah?
In Bombay, Shrikant used to cook the boys and everything would get offered to the deities.
Yeah.
He would first offer some into the fire.
Into the fire. Okay. Yeah. I mean, yes, Abai.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They give prasadam to their dead relatives. Yes, it's a fact. So they understand in India the connection between gross and subtle. That here on this earth, you can affect the subtle world of your forefathers. Just like in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was one of his arguments against fighting was that, you know, then all these ritualistic ceremonies will be stopped if we fight this battle, you know. The people will become irreligious and we cannot offer to the forefathers. And then Prabhupada was commenting on that and he said that some atheistic people in India give the argument that how can you feed somebody upstairs from downstairs? But Prabhupada says they don't understand the subtle laws of nature. They don't understand that we can actually connect with our... We are connected with our forefathers. Still, you're connected with your dead relatives. And so, yes. Verse 25. Discriminating persons are able to utilize their money, youth, and strength to achieve perfection. But I have feverishly squandered these in the useless endeavor for further wealth. Now that I am an old man, what can I achieve? So now he's old and he can't work anymore like a dog as he did in his youth. So, and he has no money, so without money he has no value to anyone. His family is useless because he has no money and everybody else. So now he's asking that question. Vishwanath again says, the very wealth for which I had become intoxicated is now gone. Intelligent people use their wealth in the service of the Supreme Lord and thus attain perfection. I am now an old man, so how will I be able to recover my losses? So he's paraphrasing what the Brahmin is saying. This is the Brahmana's lamentation. Now I'm an old man, I cannot work hard, and I lost everything, and so everything is finished. So very... And this is the way a lot of people spend their old age in poverty. They even die of lack of heat in their apartment, or you know, nobody knows. They're just alone in their apartment, or else, even worse, they go to this old age home, in which everybody drugs them up, and so they're not a disturbance. You know, they worked hard their whole lives. They work very hard for this money. But in their old age, they have nothing. And they're, I think one relative, she's been in this old age home since, I think, 2 years now. She's just not dying, but just like living in this hellish. And she was a very intelligent person, musician and very intelligent. She used to be, anyway, highly intelligent. But now she had a stroke and that was it. And she's in this old age home, yeah. Oh, euthanasia. In the communist countries, very soon they will introduce euthanasia. The good thing communism failed. Really?
But it was not euthanasia.
That's different. That's different. Yeah.
All the old people.
No, that was more than that. Yeah, I mean, they were thinking about that in. I mean, they're considering the pros and cons, if it's okay or not, if it's ethical. So far, it's not allowed, as far as I understand.
We have some clinics in Switzerland.
Oh, maybe. I mean, in America, it's not allowed. In Switzerland, okay.
In America, there was some ruling that assisted suicide is not punishable.
Assisted suicide is not punishable, gotcha. For someone who is dying.
In other words, they kind of...
They allow it, okay. If somebody is suffering, probably so much pain and like that.
There's a
Oh, I see.
Not the doctor directly, but
okay.
To pull something or press something.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I still, of course, we have our, if you read the Vanaprastha life, you go in the fire. I mean, if you can't handle it anymore, if your body is finished and you can't do your duties, and the Vanaprastha used to go in the fire.
Or one fasts.
Oh, you fast. Fasting is allowed. And some devotees have done that, those who are leaving their bodies. Not that you're healthy and you fast, but there are some cases of devotees who are leaving their bodies and they just decided not to drink and not to eat because it was just, already it was time to go. Prabhupada didn't fast till death, huh?
Gandiva fasted for 9 days.
Gandiva fasted. Huh? Yeah, Prabhupada didn't die of fasting. He was fasting for 6 months. Prabhupada. He just, on his own will, and Prabhupada's will, Prabhupada left, not from any physical thing. Okay, any questions or comments on these verses? All of them. You're connected because, so the question is, how is it that we're connected to so many forefathers? I had one set this life, another set another life, but you're connected to everyone. And it is stated in the one of the Upanishads. Again, I'm from the Navadvipa Mahatmya Pramana Kanda, that when you achieve self-realization, when you go to Brahmapur in your heart, you will meet everyone from all your lives, all your children, all your relatives from all your lives. You will meet 100 lives or something. And those who are present at the present life too, when you go to that place. And so you do have a relationship with them. And what you do influences them. They won't be fixed like that, but you will see them in how you saw them before. You will see them as you knew them before. It's not like they have that body, that particular. They may be, but they will take the form which you knew.
So
anyway, you will see, according to the, yeah. When you become liberated. No purpose. It just happens.
Maybe we can liberate also them.
Yeah, that you can do, but you have to work that. Now, what you do now will liberate your forefathers. Your devotional service. Your devotional service will liberate your forefathers. Wait, he has next.
In the classic Vedic culture, those who are pious, they do retain their forms.
Okay. Oh, that's an interesting comment. So the pious people do retain their forms in Pitriloka. Okay, in Vedic culture.
right.
Yeah. We read in Mahabharata how Arjuna was asking about his father, where Pandu went, they would see. Yes. They keep their forms in Pitriloka if you're pious.
So they take their form?
They keep the same form as they had in this life. And they stay there for a long time.
Up to what time?
That is up to the karma.
Yeah,
as long as someone offers pinda in the shad ceremony, they will stay in Pitriloka and enjoy. Who says that? Okay. Fakti Vijayapurvash. They're angry and they become Yamadutas and then they get back at those who are not offering them their pinda. Yes. And then... Pichaloka, yeah. Well, they get them there. If they haven't gone, then if you don't do anything, then they won't... Who knows where they'll be. Okay.
Grandfather.
Five generations, you can help, okay? They can all eat from the same plate.
And another one is like...
Interesting.
Typically, we say fathers.
What is coming?
The cell.
Oh, DNA, okay.
It's coming from forefathers.
Yes, that's true. DNA is coming from our forefathers. So there is a connection. Yeah, the you know, DNA, that's a... What do you call it? I don't know what you call it, how to explain it. Something... Genes. They're the genes, yeah? Our genes come from our forefathers. Yes, so Prabhupada explained. One devotee asked him, and he told one devotee, you're going to liberate 28 generations, he told one devotee. I just read recently. You will liberate 28 generations before and after. And so the devotee said, well, what kind of liberation? And Prabhupada said, they will become devotees. That's their liberation. Yeah, they will become devotees. That's real. That's permanent liberation. The other one is not. Real liberation is devotional service. So we are on the path of liberation, actually. We're in the liberated path. Path. I can't remember. It was in one of the memories of Srila Prabhupada.
Was it like a personal thing, or was it general?
I think it was general. It was general thing. Yeah. Bhaktisiddhanta said 14 for the Madhyama, 3 for the neophyte, and 100 for the pure devotee. So I guess he was somewhere in between Madhyama and pure. Or else he got... Prabhupada always gives special benedictions, so Prabhupada gives you more than you deserve. Prabhupada always gives you an added bonus, because if you follow Prabhupada, you will get the added bonus. So we should follow Prabhupada. Yeah, any other questions or comments on these verses? Yes? Okay, so it's described how... the example is Rupa Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami. 25% for your... Was it 50% for Krishna consciousness, and 25% for your family, and 25% for emergency. Something like that. It was 25% personal, 25% for your relatives, and 50% for Krishna consciousness activities. Yeah, it would be like personal. 25% for emergency. Yeah. But if you have nothing to save, then forget the emergency. You'll have to depend on Krishna. Yeah, and the Grihastha, if you study the Grihastha, they have a seminar. I have the book. And it has all about how to budget your money. And it was saying there, you know, okay, this much you save for education, this if you wanted, you know, something personal improvement, you know, like 15%. And then there's your expenses, you know, and then there's, yeah, for saving, they save quite a bit there. And 5 to 15% for charity is there in the, they give 5 to 10% for your personal, like, improvement, education, or going to the holy places, or whatever. And then something for emergency. There's a Grihastha seminar. Strengthening the bonds that free us. Yeah. Yeah.
Accumulated wealth.
Yeah, accumulated wealth, exactly.
It doesn't mean that he was doing it every month, he was giving
yeah.
his paycheck.
But if you have accumulated wealth,
yeah.
This is the point. Yeah, it was his accumulated, means if you have a stash.
But if you have just current for every day.
Yeah, they have also, yeah, then good luck. It's good if you can save something for emergency, but, you know, sometimes devotees are in the position where they can't save anything. They just spend everything. That's the brahmana. The brahmana spends. Yeah, okay. You think you're in a bad position, think of Kolavecha Sridhar. Whatever he got every day, 50% was... Yes, this is a point. Yeah, yeah. There is what they call a poverty consciousness and a wealth consciousness. Yeah. Well, the poverty consciousness, I mean, there's a whole list. Maybe I can bring it tomorrow and you can all have a test of if you're in poverty consciousness or not, which is not good. It's not good to be in poverty consciousness. Yeah.
There are actually many management gurus. One of them is very famous, Robert Kiyosaki.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So he said he is strongly advocating donating.
Yes.
From the very beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning.
He says, if you don't give, you don't get. And
yeah.
What you give, you get.
What you give, you get.
So
if you don't give, you don't get.
And one rich devotee told me that in order to earn, you must spend.
Yes, in order to earn, you must spend.
There is no flow, there is no inflow.
There is no flow, there is no inflow.
So he investing in is one thing, but also there's another one who consults all rich people. He says if there's a stagnation in the business, he suggests the business, the owner, to do some big donation.
Give a big donation to get it moving. Yeah, that's one thing. If sometimes you have no money, you think, well, I cannot give donation. But if it, then when you get more money, then you still think, well, it's still not enough for me to give. So then you always have that same, that's poverty consciousness. So it's good to get in the habit of giving something. So then you can...
Even 1 rupee.
Yeah, even 1 rupee.
To Krishna.
Yeah, to Krishna.
Not to outside, but to Krishna. Not for beggars.
Yes. To Krishna.
Donation box.
Very good. Very good. Or to Krishna's devotees. If you it doesn't have to be beggars, it can be somebody, you know. Yes, Abhay.
It's good for the individual to give.
What's that?
I say it's good for the individual consciousness.
Yes, yes, it's good. Yeah, right.
At least he's given.
Well,
you know, as far as your business is concerned, it's all karma, ain't it? Well, that's our demises.
Well, it's not just all karma. So the question is, you know, as far as your business is concerned, isn't it just all karma? But the thing is, you can in this life, you can do something to improve your karma by giving in donation. Then your karma is you get something. It's improved. Yeah, that's right. That's how they think. Indians too. they've told me, I'm giving you this donation because I know I'll get so much more back.
But I don't want to think like that, surely.
Devotees have told me that. Devotee businessmen. I mean, Indian. You know, they think like that. I will give and I will definitely get back more.
But
yes.
For me, but next lifetime, not this.
No, you get this life. We get fast, yeah.
In second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada mentioned in the part.
Yeah, he mentions in the poor part.
That particular person, you get this person.
Half-baked Brahmin, you get some, you know, maybe double.
Yeah,
and a fully, it goes up, you know, 100, and then 100 and million or whatever. It just goes, yeah. So they know that. In India, they know that law. Yes?
To give to devotees? It's devotional service.
Yes, that's right.
Devotees, one becomes a sort of agent. The Lord, always the devotees are not maintained by their karmic reactions.
That's right.
Directly by Krishna.
Yeah.
So one becomes
you're helping Krishna.
An agent.
Yeah, an agent of Krishna. If you give to devotees. Yes.
Is that Bhaktisiddhanta about Srila
Bhaktisiddhanta? Oh, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta.
There's a chapter on charity. There is some amazing descriptions how Bhaktisiddhanta chided his sannyasis even for and also Grihasthas for not giving donation to the beggars.
Huh?
He's saying, oh, I will not give donation to the beggar because this is karma. But then your heart becomes hard.
Your heart becomes hard. Yeah, I was in one class. Go ahead.
It seems he himself was
distributing. Yeah, I was when one class was being given by Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you know, our present one. And he was telling about his trip to Radhakund, and there was this little girl, and she begged him for something, and she said, I need some shoes. And he said, okay, I'll take you to the shop and buy you some shoes. He took the little girl and her sister to the shop, bought them shoes, and then she said, I also need this, and he bought them that, and he ended up spending 2,000 rupees on these Radhakund kids, or maybe it was Roshana, or one of those places, you know, Roshana, or I think it was Roshana. And he said, you know, and he was saying, you know, how happy they were, and he was buying them clothes and shoes, and, you know, and even though he was a sannyasi, but he had this soft heart, and he was doing that. It was right in Bhagavatam class. I was, wow. these little kids, So, yeah, it does do something. Yes. Yeah, it's confusing for you. Don't imitate. Yeah, you don't give money. He didn't give money. He gave shoot.
This is what Bhaktisiddhantaji was shining.
Oh.
He was saying, I'm implicated in their karma. Uh-huh. I protect myself. Uh-huh,
okay.
What you're thinking about.
Yeah. Even Prabhupada, sometimes he would give to the beggars like little, you know, it was in those days it was 10 paisa, 50 paisa, whatever. Prasadam is good. Yeah, prasadam is best. But Bhaktisiddhanta says you can even give money. Bank account. There was one of these lady beggars. She's no more. She was out in front of the temple for years and years. And she used to give donations to the Gurukul for feasts. You know that lady? I don't know.
Sweet rice.
Sweet rice, huh? I don't know what her name was, but
she
used to give donations for the Gurukul to have.
And make sure that, you know, she was able to distribute.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was like, yeah. So some of them, you don't know who, some of these beggars, some we know who they are, but some we don't know. Yes. Charity. Yes, charity and ignorance. Yeah. You don't give it to the alcoholic to buy more liquor. So, yes. You have to be careful. So for us, it's better to just give sweets, Mahaprasad, if you're worried about anything. But if you're transcendental and you're following in the footsteps of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, then you can give other things. Yes. Okay. You don't like to give to strong, healthy men who can work. Okay, you don't like to encourage them to beg for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, the little children, sometimes they give them a lecture.
You can speak Hindi.
One thing Prabhupada also said about the giving to the beggars, that here in Vrindavan, those who go around and ask, you shouldn't give. But those who sit in one place, just don't move from there and just depend on whatever is in their thing.
Okay, here you go. So if you want to give something to the beggars, give to the ones who don't beat you over the head or grab your clothes. And give to the ones who are just sitting peacefully and waiting and depending. There's many.
Sometimes you have widows.
Yeah.
Many widows. They have hardly any income.
Yeah, they don't have income.
They definitely will not spend it on alcohol or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, these old widows, they're just sent here. I know my lady who does the cleaning in my house, she was widowed at the age of 20, lost her husband and her son. And, you know, she's just been here since now she's 40-something. They just come here. They don't know what to do. The family send them. They don't have any income or anything, and they just come. They know they'll get food here, free food.
And some word, bhajan, and everything.
Yeah, no, yeah. And my other lady, she does bhajan, yeah. You get paid for every hour you sing at the temples. Yeah, no, they give good. The pay is for 3 hours. 3 hours, 750 rupees. 6 hours, 1500. So if anybody wants to get a job singing at the temple, they do 24 hours. So they do the night shift too. The night shift. Yes. He did not use artha for kama. Yeah, I mean, the material. He was lower than the materialistic people. They use artha for kama. You know, it's not good, but it's better than just not using it. It's not good. I mean, we don't for somebody in the spiritual life or even in the material. It's not good, but I mean, some of it can be used for kama. It's all right if you're religious. If you're in the varnashram, you can use some of your wealth for kama, some for dharma. But dharma is very most for shudras. It's kama, yeah.
Kama usually is understood to be at least the minimal maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
Required from the body.
Yeah, minimum maintenance.
It seems he was not even feeding his own body.
Yeah, I know.
It was like wealth was more
a collection, collector's item.
Wealth was more precious to him than his own body.
Yeah, the art of his wealth was. You have to use something for karma to maintain your body. And Bhagavatam says that too, you know, you maintain yourself at least so you can inquire into the philosophical questions. Tatvasya tatva jigyasya, jivasya tatva jigyasya. Jivasya tatva jigyasya. Nartho yascheya karma bi, not for other things. You should use your artha for maintaining yourself so you can inquire into the problems of life as a human being. That's 1, 2, 10. Yes. Yes? Oh, there is richer people. There is this Raghunath's parents, Raghunath Das Goswami. They were so rich. Yeah, they were getting lakhs a month. I mean, and imagine 500 years ago, what was a lakh worth, or a few lakhs? Even now it's, you know, pretty good. If you get a couple of thousand, what is it? $2,000 to $4,000 a month. I mean, in India, but not in the West. It's just, it's hard to live. No, you need at least 3,000. In one sense, they're high, the yakshas, in one sense, they're higher, but according to this verse we read, that the human being is higher, because even the demigods, they want to take birth as human beings. Best birth is human life. Better than these others, so yakshas, ghosts, spirits. It's better. Well, maybe it was just attached. You know, you could like to collect things. Some people like to collect, so some people collect money. Yeah.
I remember
he starved to death with $1 million. Yeah, I heard that story.
That
yeah, there's that attachment, there's fear, there's different. Okay, I think we should stop now because. Okay.